bourbon, and beyond. A celebration of the spirit and soul of Kentucky. September 23rd and 24th in Louisville, the world's top bourbons, paired with celebrity chefs, Louisville's top restaurants, and iconic musicians, featuring the voice behind Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks. Just like the wine window. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Eddie Vedder. The Steve Miller Band. Also featuring Joe Bonamassa, Band of Horses, Gary Clark Jr., Amos Lee, Buddy Guy, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Chris Robinson Brotherhood, Paul Rogers. Celebrity chef appearances from Tom Colicchio. Over 20 of Louisville's top restaurants, curated by Chef Edward Lee. For the full list of artists, chefs, food, bourbons, and tickets, head to bourbonandbeyond.com. For our love of bourbon, for our love of Kentucky, bourbon and beyond. Get your tickets on sale now.
Hey, what's up, guys? You're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today, we're joined by special music guest, Sean James. Sean, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, man. Thank you so much for stopping by today's show. I know you've been super, super busy. I'm excited to talk about everything that you've got going on. Just right off the top of my head, man, you were at the inaugural Bourbon and Beyond Music Festival last weekend, and you totally killed it out there. Was just wondering, what was it like for you performing at the inaugural festival? Because that was, you know, its first year, its first inception, and it was just, I mean, it had to have been pretty amazing for you.
Yeah, you know, playing the first time there in general in Louisville for me, that was the first time I've ever been, and actually got a chance to play and meet the folks there. But beyond that, just the caliber of the artists they had on that fest just blew my mind, you know. Gary Clark, Stevie Nicks, Joe Bonamassa, Eddie Vedder. So I was definitely hyped about it, but we got up there and I played with the Shapeshifters, my more of a rock band sound. And at first I was a little nervous, to be honest, about not with the show, but if people would be kind of into it, because we were definitely probably the loudest thing, heaviest thing at the fest. But they loved it. They were into it. The energy was there from the first note. So it was amazing. I'm really stoked that they let us be a part of that, for sure.
No doubt. And last weekend was also like your birthday weekend. What was it? I guess, you know, that had to, you know, I'm sure that added to the euphoria.
Oh, it hurt.
Man, I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was definitely, we definitely went beyond the bourbon. That was, man. Yeah, I performed on my birthday and afterwards. We played in the afternoon, so I think I was up till 7 in the morning. It was ridiculous.
Holy smokes, man. So tell me, what did you do to, I guess, prepare for the festival? Because I know that, like you said, I'm sure that there was a little bit of nervousness and, you know, but I'm sure it was like a healthy nervousness, but I'm sure, like, I can just imagine how you felt. Was there anything that you did, I guess, in particular to just prepare for such a big showing?
Actually, man, we've gotten to the point, like, we've been a band now for about 4 years, and we've been touring about 150 to 200 days every year. And this year in particular, we've done the most days we've ever done. So preparing for something like this, it's gotten to the point where, you know, not to sound cocky or anything, but we play so much that we don't really have to prepare too much. You know what I mean? The nervousness was more with the, like, the caliber of the fest, you know, with the names and seeing my name up there next to those big guys. It was just kind of mind-blowing to me. But, you know, we just tour so much, it's become second nature. And that's the beautiful thing about it, is when you tour that much and you play that many shows, you just get to get up there and do what you do and show the people what you got, you know. So, really, yeah, not too much. I just got the boys, picked them up. I think I drove 60 hours that week before the fest, coming from L.A. and all this other stuff. So I'd say getting some sleep was the biggest prep I needed to do.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about the writing process on your solo album, On the Shoulders of Giants. I know that was, like, you know, a really, really groundbreaking album for you. I guess, what was it like for you, the writing process, everything you know, with that album?
Yeah, with that one, I had a particular vision in mind. I'd wanted to put out this old-sounding gospel blues album in the vein of, like, Sunhouse, Robert Johnson, and people like that for a while. But I never really felt like I was ready until we got done with our touring at the end of 2015. I just felt in a good spot, had some time off after our tour season. We always take off in the winter. And I decided to get down with it and started working on it and had the songs written in about a month or so. And I was just constantly listening to those old records and older artists, kind of getting inspiration from that. And the stuff was there. And then I decided, you know, well, where do I want to record at? And the number one thing would have been Sun Studio in Memphis. So I hit them up. Yeah. And I hit them up. I emailed them. And the first thing they said is I sent them a few videos with the asking if we could do it. And they go, hey, aren't you that Wolf guy? I had just had this viral video of me in Colorado at this wolf sanctuary, and I was singing, and there's wolves walking around me, and this one wolf starts howling, and there's 40 wolves on this mountain during a blizzard in the snow in Colorado, and the mountains start howling along with me as I'm singing, and it got viral that year too. So he had recognized me from that. And because of that, it gave me a foot in the door. So I was totally able to go to one of my dream studios and record the album there. So before then, and I recorded that in, like, early 2016. So I wrote the song in, like, November 2015. And then the next 2 months, I played, like, 3 hours a day because I really wanted to go into that, doing it just how the old guys did. You know what I mean? Like, one take. One performance for one song, no overdubs, no nothing. So that's the way I did that record. And it definitely has that older world gospel blues feel, but I definitely put a new kind of rhythm, and there's a little bit of a darkness there, as with most of my music and storytelling and stuff like that, and big mythological type ideas and stuff like that. But yeah, it's one of my favorite records, and it's one that I wanted to do for a while. So really stoked that I was able to do it there, and with the kind of performance I wanted to do, it was a really good time for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Sun Studio, we're located here in Memphis, and Sun Studio is legendary. You know what I mean? It's like so much history there. It's
exactly.
It's right in the heart of, you know, midtown, downtown, and it's just like, it's a great, great place.
Absolutely, man. And that's, you know, I was nervous. I wanted to do it, but then when I found that it was happening, it was like, oh, I've got to get my skill up. So that's why I practiced it 3 hours a day, 2 months, just making sure I had it. And when we went in there, it was funny, you know, normally records take days and days and days, of week, if not weeks, to do. And I walked in there at 7 p.m., I remember, and they were so on top of their game, had everything set up perfectly. I was using the old mics that all these legends were using.
Oh, my
God. Nuts. Yeah, it was nuts. So I walk in at 7, and I walk out of the studio at 10. The whole record was done. We had it completely tracked, and it was the easiest yet most nerve-wracking recording experience I ever had. Like, they made it so smooth. And it almost felt wrong walking out of there because I was like, man, I feel like I should go work a little bit more on this.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah,
but
no doubt.
It was, we had just, you know, it's because of the work I put in before, and it was a beautiful thing, man. It's one of my favorites for sure.
No doubt. So did you get a chance to, like, get some barbecue, head downtown to Beale or anything after you finished up, or did you just kind of head back?
Yeah, so I had planned, like, 3 days there, right? Because like I said, you expect you're going to spend more time. So we knocked it out in that first day and then just hung out, you know, got a little tipsy, went to barbecue joint, just had some fun for like the next 2 days. And it was so mind-blowing.
Holy,
I don't know.
Crap.
It feels good when you build up this pressure for a project. And then all of a sudden it's done way easier than you expect. All the pressure was off. We were just having the time of our lives. So, yeah, it was the first time I actually got to spend a little bit more time in Memphis rather than just like one day playing a show there, bouncing out, you know. So it was a lot of fun. I got to see a bunch of local blues bands, meet some damn good food and all that. So, yeah, absolutely loved it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So last night you guys played your last U.S. Show date for the year, right in Fayetteville, which isn't too far away from here. What was it like for you? You know, because you're gearing up for your European tour. What was it like for you? I guess you know, playing that last U.S. show here.
You know, with having the last one be in Fayetteville, kind of where we kicked off everything we've done. Fayetteville's been our home base for a while. I don't necessarily live there anymore, but the whole band is from there, and it really is the home base of the Shapeshifters. So having it, that place be the last show is always just really heartwarming and nostalgic because it's where we started, and now we've got this amazing fan base and good group of friends there. So last night I decided, you know, for the last U.S. show of the year, I really wanted to do something where we split it in two and do a full set of the acoustic type blues stuff I do, and then a second set of the more heavy rock and roll Shapeshifter stuff. So that's what we did. So I think I did about an hour and 15 of acoustic material, kicking it off, and then we finished with a good hour and 15 of the band. So it was a long night, but it was super awesome to get to play for the people that helped me even get to where I am now, you know, like the ones who supported it in the very beginning. And the energy was just through the roof. And it's always good to play, you know, a good U.S. show in the end before going to Europe. Because, you know, you miss your home. You miss the States when you're over there so long. At first, you're like kind of shocked and culture shocked and having fun and enjoying it. But after the first month, I think you really start to miss home and all that. So, yeah, especially having to be Fayetteville, Arkansas, their last one before heading out, it's something special for sure.
No doubt. What are you most looking forward to with the European tour? Because I know that's going to be like a whole new ballfield. Is there anything that you're most looking forward to?
You know, we've been touring Europe, I would say, about once a year for the past 4 years, and it's been an amazing, amazing ride out there. Like, it grows so fast out there. I think it's because they don't really have as much as our kind of music, and it's something special for them. So the main thing I'm excited about this time is I have yet to bring the Shapeshifters to the UK and to Ireland. So that is what I'm looking forward to the most, because I did a acoustic tour for the first time earlier this year over there, and the response was so huge, and then they were just begging for the Shapeshifters to come over with that rowdier sound. So we're definitely gonna bring that rowdiness over, and I have a feeling it's gonna get super wild. Not that it won't be other places, but it's always special bringing something to a place for the first time, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And having people be stoked about it. Like, that's what blew my mind the first time I went to Europe. You know, we went over there, and I didn't really expect too much. It was my first time. And I remember the first gig was in the Netherlands, and we show up to this venue, and this whole crew is, like, unloading our gear for us from the Sprinter. And I was like, whoa, this feels wrong. Like, what are you doing? This is our job, you know? And so they unload it. And then we get into the venue, and it's a massive venue for our first time in Europe. And I was like, oh, man, I hope that we don't let these guys down, blah, blah. They open the doors at 7, and like 150 people come in. And then by the time we're playing, there's like 250 people. And I remember the first song we were playing was The Wanderer, and half the crowd are screaming the lyrics back at me. In a country that doesn't even speak English as their first language, you know, we've never been there before. It was a complete mind-blowing experience. So definitely the first times like that are always a really good, fun time to see just how people react to stuff when they're not really from where you are. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that's got to be a trip. And that's what goes back to, like, music being the great, like, equalizer, because it's like, no matter your race, your ethnicity, your sexuality, your religion, it's like we are, you know, formed, we have this bond through music, you know what I mean? It breaks down the
absolutely.
Layers. And so that's
such
an amazing feeling. I can just only imagine.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. Like, sometimes over in Europe, you know, people come up to you, and you obviously can see they do not speak good English, but they're so touched, and they feel, you know, you put out there so much that they're just trying any way they can to communicate with you. And, you know, most of the time it's like these broken conversations you're having, but you can just see it, that they were really touched by it. And it's beautiful what music can do, absolutely.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to jump ahead. You recently released two new music videos. One is for Hellhound, the other one is for Delilah. And both videos are amazing. They're different, you know what I mean? They're very, very much different, but they're very much unique to each, you know, each song that they're for. Tell me a little bit about these videos. Like, did you have like a big input in them, or was it something that just kind of came together?
Yeah, so like I was saying, earlier this year I went on this massive 3-month solo acoustic European tour. And it was my first time in Spain, and the people we were working with that set up the shows, they were like, well, we also have this thing where we want to do a couple of videos with you in a warehouse and blah, blah. And I was like, okay, you know, whatever. I really like doing live videos. And I don't know, there's something unique about the performance associated with something live that's unique every time. So I was like, sure, let's just do it. And I didn't know what to expect. You know, I was completely in the dark. So I show up to this warehouse after my gig in Madrid, and I walk in, and it's one of the biggest production crews I've ever seen for something that I've done video-wise. And the lighting rig, they had a trailer inside the warehouse that was separate from everything. It was just like a mobile audio recording studio and like a super high-quality one. They had like 4 huge cameras. Like, they had a set planned and like a comic strip of how the video was going to go. They had timed it. Like, the first one for Hellhound was done on this moving kind of rail walkway thing, and they had timed it to start far away at the end of the room and finish right as the song finished. So they had put so much detail and so much thought and time into this that I was blown away by what they did. And I get there, and we do like maybe 2 to 3 takes of each song, just to kind of so they can have options and see which ones they like. And we were done, and it was like 3 months till I heard anything from them. And then I heard from them, and they showed me the videos, and I was just massively blown away because the scale and the production that they put into this, just because they were passionate about the project, no other reason, like, period. I didn't hire them and do anything like that. They just love what I do with music and really wanted to be a part of it. And they blew my mind for sure with what they did.
Man, that is awesome. That is awesome. I've always thought of like music videos as art, and it's just like it's always something to see like the finished product, because, you know, like each video, like a short movie, has, you know, its own story, its own backstory and everything. So it's really cool to always hear, you know, from the source, like, hey, this is what it was like filming it, and this is what went
in. Yeah, it was so simple, but, you know, the main thing, and another thing with that, with music videos, you know, I've learned that you can make a music video for a song you already recorded, and then just piece together the video on top of that already recorded song, but my favorite thing to do, like with these two, is that they're live, one take straight through, no overdubs. And that adds a whole new uniqueness and character to the performance of that specific song. You know, I might have done the song 3 times, and each one of those 3 times are little nuances that were completely different from the other one. So, you know, they got to choose which take they like and roll with that. But they were all straight through, no stopping. And that's what I love, is that live, raw, authentic essence to it all.
Hey, that is... Yeah, that is something. I mean, I think that is like a feeling unlike any other, you know what I mean? Just, you know, being able to just sit there and just to be a part of that and to create that and help create it. It leaves you almost speechless.
Yeah, it's beautiful once you see the final product, too. Like, I had no idea. I was totally amazed and shocked by that.
Absolutely. So, Sean, about your music, I wanted to ask you, you know, for somebody that, you know, is listening to this interview that's, you know, never heard your music before, or, you know, is new to your music and new to what you do, like, what's the biggest takeaway that you want people to get from your music when they hear it? What do you want people to you know, identify with when they hear your music, your songs, your lyrics?
You know, it's going to be a split answer for me, but overall, I want them to hear a rawness, an authenticity, and a realness in the soul of the music that you can feel that we actually feel what we're saying. You know, we're not just making a song or writing a song or playing a song because it's cool or because I like the riff. I do it because I'm emotionally affected by the music that I'm making, and I want other people to feel something deep from the music as well. Because in my opinion, it always has been, but especially these days, it's never been easier to make music. It's never been easier to know how to write a song. You know, there's so much information out there, but what I feel is lacking is that emotional, passionate feel that truly relates the artist to the song they're making, you know? And
absolutely.
I would say the number one thing I want people to take from it is to feel something from it, period. And if you feel something from it, whatever that might be, anger, sadness, joy, sorrow, whatever, then I feel like I've done something correct. Because if I can make you feel your music, then that's one of my biggest goals, you know? And hopefully it might inspire you or help you release an emotion you needed to get out that you didn't know how to get out. Maybe it was a helpful factor in that, or it can be used as therapy or something, you know. Back in the day, I always wanted to control human emotion through music, but then as I got older, I saw that was kind of a vain goal. And so now, you know, I want to control human emotion, but I want to, what do I want to do with that? And really, like I said, it's to make people feel, to inspire, and to help people through. And that's really my biggest goal with music. Now, that's the first answer to it. This one's going to be a little long. I'm sorry.
Okay. Hey, no, that's cool. I'm interested.
So for people that are new to us, you know, if you go, say you're on Spotify and you look up Sean James as opposed to Sean James and the Shapeshifters, a lot of people get confused about this. Sean James, my solo stuff that I do on the acoustic side, is a very raw, I call it raw blues, haunting folk, and a mixture of powerful soul, all blended together to do something hopefully new and unique. And that's a very acoustic sound and very raw kind of emotional thing. Versus the Shapeshifters, if you were to look up Sean James and the Shapeshifters, it's more of a heavy, loud, swampy, blues riff-fueled rock band that's more roaring and kind of rowdy and heavy. So a lot of people get confused because they'll find me through the acoustic thing, or they'll see an acoustic video that's like really beautiful and very down to earth and mellow, and then they don't realize the difference, and they come out to a Shapeshifter show, and it's this heavy rock and roll intense thing, and they're like, whoa, this is not what I saw. And I was like, well, I'm sorry you were confused, but it's definitely a 50-50 split with the music that we make and I make. So there's two worlds to it, and that's something that I try to let people know, because there's a lot of people who only like, you know, the more softer side. And then there's some people that only like the heavier side, and there's a lot of people who like both. But that's the one thing I notice, I confuse people sometimes, because I refuse to be, you know, categorized in this one genre style of being a one-trick pony, because we can do so much, you know. Why just do one thing when you have the ability to do many?
Absolutely. I totally agree. And then, you know, having the two distinct sounds, in my opinion, it gives, like, way to musical diversity, and it shows that you have range, that you're not just pigeonholed into one genre, you know, being one genre.
Absolutely.
So it's really cool when you do it that way. I feel like it's more of like an artist.
I feel it's cool, and a lot of artists think it's cool, but you would be surprised the amount of negative feedback I've gotten from people telling me, well, you're making a mistake, you need to choose one route, one path, and devote all your time to it. And I'm always like, no, I mean, this might be good for you, but it's not how I want to roll, you know.
Exactly.
So I'm glad that you see it that way.
Yes, sir. Well, Sean, I want to thank you so much for taking time to do this interview with me. I really appreciate it. I mean,
thanks for having me on.
You're a busy dude. You're definitely a busy dude. But, man, thank you so much. Like, this means, like, the world to me that you came on today. And I wanted to just open the floor to you if there's anything you'd like to say to our listening audience.
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest things if you truly love someone and you're passionate about it, follow it through. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult no matter what. But don't be ashamed to do what you really want to do, because in the end, you know, you have to follow your heart and do what you want, or else you'll be looking back with regret, and possibly you might not have ever done that thing you really wanted to do. And I went through that for a while before I started this. I had stability. I had more money with the path that I had chosen. But because I gave up all that and followed this, now I'm doing something I truly love, and I feel I'm making an impact and helping other people too. So follow your heart, follow your dreams, and be relentless. If you're really passionate about it, there's no sacrifice that's too big to achieve.
Absolutely. That's some beautiful advice, because it's like, yeah, I think the scariest thing is like leaving, I guess, your security blanket, or leaving what you're familiar with and deciding to like embark on, you know, something new, something adventurous, and something that doesn't have the immediate, like, you know, the immediate...
the gratification, instant gratification,
right,
and payoff. Yeah. No, I get it, man. And it's been scary for me over the years, you know. I've had a lot of adversity and difficulty and trials to go through and stuff, but, you know, I stuck with it, and things are slowly growing and growing and growing and getting better, and I'm glad that I chose this 100%.
Absolutely. And you're definitely, I mean, you've got a skill set for it. I mean, it's a talent that you have. So, I mean, it definitely shows. It'd be different if, like, you know, you had no skill and it's just like you were just kind of plucking along. But, I mean, I can definitely say you're a very talented artist. So, I think.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And I just think between your gifting and your humility, I just feel like, you know, you're just destined for, like, really, really great things. I know it sounds cheesy, but, I mean, I
appreciate that, man. It inspires me, and it's crazy to think that other people think that. But I really appreciate you having me on, too, because I'm still a very underground artist, unsigned, and anyone that believes in it and helps spread the word, I really, really appreciate. So thank you again for having me. Absolutely.
You're welcome. No problem, Sean. And I was going to ask you, for our listening audience, where can they find out more about you and purchase your music?
Yeah, if you want to go to our website, that's like where everything, there's links to everything. That's www.seanjamesmusic.com, and Sean is S-H-A-W-N.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Music, any of that stuff, YouTube, we're all over that. So look us up. You'll find it. You'll find a way there.
Awesome sauce. Thank you so much, Sean.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome. Guys, that was special music guest Sean James of Sean James and the Shapeshifters. We'll put the link to his website in the body of this post. If you're listening to us on SoundCloud, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. We're also on your iOS device. If you've got an Apple product of any kind, you can listen to us by downloading the Stitcher Smart Radio app. It's available for free in the iTunes store. Download the app, search for our show name, Redefining the Counterculture. You'll hear this interview with Sean. We're also available for Android users. If you've got an Android phone or device of any type, you can go to the Google Play Store, search Google Play Music, search for our show name. Once you search for our show name, you can hear this interview with Sean. We're also available for Roku. If you've got a Roku player or a Roku smart television, you can watch this interview in the privacy of your own home. We have over 200-plus hours of original content, programming, and interviews, all free of charge. Just go to the Roku Channel Store from your Roku television or your Roku player and search for our name. It's Witten Radio. Once you see our name, download the app, and then begin streaming all free of charge.